Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, April 22nd, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Oh, not much is happening today in news stories, although behind the scenes there are many, many things going on, but it was kind of a slow news day. The number one story hitting the top of the inquiries of people wanting to know is about how a startup company can thrive on a four-day work week. I guess everybody's looking to find out how can they only work 4 days and be successful, Al?
I think you have to employ your part-time help has to be also part-time welfare. See, that way you can get the government. If the government will pay the help $30,000 a year and you only have to make up the difference, then you only have to run your corporation for maybe 4 days out of the week, maybe even one or two.
Well, everybody wanted to know how to work 4 days. So, interesting.
I'm sure a lot of employers are wondering the same thing. They're saying, how can we get at least 4 days' work out of these people?
And we don't have to pay for Obamacare. Get them out of there. But anyway. But interesting, we're going to talk a little bit about Bitcoin and some other things. But first, the markets today, you have gold down $5.30 at $1,286. You have silver basically unchanged, $19.54. Platinum was up a dollar, plus one at $14.04. And palladium was plus six at $7.88. The USDX today was actually down 0.07 at 79.89, and crude oil took a big hit today, down 2.25 at 101.69. Paper markets today, big numbers in the, although they did come off their highs, all the markets ended higher, and of course they were led by the NASDAQ. You had the Dow up 65 points at 16,514, the NASDAQ up 39 at 4,161, and the S&P was also up 8 at 1879, and the 10-year yield, 2.73. It was just, a week ago that was at 2.6 on that 10-year yield. So a little bit of move there. And, just a bunch of mergers and acquisitions and You know, it's interesting, two of the largest pharmaceutical companies are exchanging the businesses. One is in major businesses, vaccines, and the other one is oncology. So they just thought, well, we'll just reverse it. Since you do the majority of vaccines, we'll give you our portion of it and give us the oncology. And, of course, if you had any money in those companies after you watched the news report this morning, they're both up. One was Eli. I can't recall the other company off the top of my head, but and everybody was following. Netflix was the other big story out that they were following, you know, TV and movies. Netflix is to increase subscription prices, so everybody wanted to know how much.
Well, it'll be a little surprise. It's kind of like Nancy Pelosi. You have to vote for it, and then you can see what's inside it. You remember that with Obamacare.
Oh,
perhaps they'll have the same thing. You can vote for the Netflix increase, and then we'll tell you what it is afterwards.
And another interesting report, though, this wasn't number one, but gun silencer sales are booming. And I thought the silencer was out. I thought that...
They've changed the law on it.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, you can... It is no longer deemed to be part of the firearm or whatever. I'm not sure exactly what's happened, but I've been told by somebody who might know what he's talking about. I haven't looked into it myself. The silencers are now legal, although you still have to be registered to buy one, all right, the same sense that you have to be registered to buy a firearm. The silencers themselves, there's no special license to them. It's the same thing as purchasing a firearm, and if you want one, get one.
So I found that interesting.
How many do you want?
What are you doing? I can't say it on the radio. Never mind.
You can't?
We can't.
Less than a dozen, then? Is that what I presume less than a dozen? Is that true?
They're pretty close.
Okay.
Close. I'll throw around some extras, but anyway. Pillows.
Say what?
Anyway, you can't joke about something like that on radio.
Yeah, you can.
Can you?
Joke about, yes, you can.
Okay.
We have freedom. We have freedom of jokes, not necessarily speech, but freedom of jokes. And if you don't believe that, go ahead and look at the people we have in Congress today. Definitely freedom of jokes. And the White House, my God, that's freedom of Monty Python.
Jimmy Fallon I don't know if it was last night or the night before, he couldn't joke about what Hillary Clinton, how she dresses, and he got all kinds of bad just because he joked about what she wore. And it's just like, well, I guess even on late night TV, they monitor your jokes. It's like, get a life.
Hillary Clinton supporters, I would have to imagine they are pretty tightly wound. All right. I would imagine if you're a supporter of Hillary Clinton, I'll bet you're so tired of being defensive about it, having to explain it to everyone, that you're just about ready to attack anyone who says anything about Hillary that's a little bit peculiar. Got an article here from the Washington Times that deals with Hillary Clinton, and the headline is, "What will a grandchild mean for Hillary Clinton? America's version of the Royal Baby Watch," but it's America's version of the Royal Baby Watch, but Chelsea Clinton's announcement last week that she's pregnant ended up taking a backseat to her mother's political ambitions. Within hours of the revelation, pundits, columnists, and reporters pontificated on what being a grandmother will mean for Hillary Rodham Clinton's campaign should she decide to run for president in 2016. And so the question is America ready to elect a grandma to be president? There's one question. Will Hillary decide to run for the White House? Or will a new grandchild bring out some sort of an inclination to dote on her new grandbaby? Just stay home and bake cookies. What do you think? You think Hillary will start baking cookies, Melody?
No, I don't see Hillary baking cookies. However, this could also be her reason to... You know, to come out of politics. You know, I don't think she would.
That's one of the things.
I don't think she would win anyway.
It's hard to say what's going to happen.
I'll tell you what, people love her.
Who would suppose that a man born in Kenya could win the presidency of the United States? You know, if there was a time not so long ago where you said, "Well, we're going to have a black man who's born in Kenya who's going to be president of the United States. And people would have said, are you crazy? What are you smoking? What kind of drugs are you doing? So it doesn't strike me impossible that Hillary Clinton could be president of the United States.
Yes, but if that was the case, she would have, I think she'd be president now. That was her chance. That was her time, I believe. She had a lot of strength at that point in time, and I think she just has too much baggage today, along with Benghazi and being how many years older. I don't think she's got a chance. I think who she supports.
It depends, though. There's one wild card in the equation, the Republican Party. They are famous for nominating candidates who couldn't get elected to be homecoming king, all right, down the local high school. And yet they'll run them. They'll get behind them. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen here. It's the continuing drama.
You know, I think this next presidential election is going to be, will probably be the most important, but it will also be the most interesting. And as you said, it depends who they get. And it's, we know who they're going to have. I mean, they've already been fairly vocal on those who will be running. So
You never know. This is one of those elections. You know, Bill Clinton was elected president in his first term, and I think that might have been 1992, but I don't recall. What is it? I don't recall clearly. But Clinton was elected under, and the reason he was elected is because everyone thought there was no way that Bush Sr. could be defeated, and therefore none of the more credible candidates bothered to run for the White House. They said, not this year. There's no way we're going to beat George Sr. You know, and Bill said, throw my hat in the ring. What the heck? And turned out it worked for him. So you never know. This is always, it's strange. And it's interesting to consider, and it's interesting to make your predictions, particularly because I don't see how anyone can make a prediction with any serious confidence. I know some people will make predictions and it'll turn out that they're right and we'll never hear the end of it. Said, I predicted, and sure enough, that happened. Right? But I don't think anyone really has real confidence in who's going to be elected in the next presidential election 2 years from now. I mean, who do you think is going to run for the Republican Party?
Well, you have the handful that are speaking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, and no
Chris
one,
Christie,
I haven't, and yeah, it's just, you know, the top Republicans, you know, the same ones, same, you know, the same old ones, you know, Rand Paul, Cruz, Christie,
mm-hmm.
and the same ones. But, who have you heard about the Democrat side? Other than Hillary?
Yeah. Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody, really. There is no other contender for the Democrat Party at this time that's been identified by the public, where the public says, oh, yeah, I'd rather have so-and-so than Hillary. For the moment, she's the de facto nominee. And I've seen her on one of the programs, TV program, about 3 weeks ago, something like that. She was there with Bill and Chelsea. And they were all just obviously gleeful. They were being, I can't remember who was interviewing them, but the issue of whether Hillary was going to run came up, and she wouldn't answer. But she was grinning and gleeful, and Bill was awake and gleeful, and Chelsea could barely keep from smiling and laughing. And it looked like the family had made up their mind. They're going to go for it. So,
oh, my. Just sign of the times, folks.
Sign of the times. What do you say? Yeah, sign of the, you know, what do they call it? A silly season. You know, people are running for office. The only difference is back in the day, the silly season only lasted for a few months out of the election year. We're already in the silly season for 2016. Huh? It's bizarre.
Very much so. There was another story in the news today where the Federal Election Commission will consider a request this Wednesday that could open the doors for donors to make political contributions in Bitcoin. And I think that's interesting. Yes, Al?
How long before they do pints of blood? Yeah. For those of you who don't have any Bitcoins, you don't have any cash, if you'd like to donate a pint of blood to support your political candidate, you can go right down to, I don't know, someplace on the Bowery or someplace where people are impoverished, and you can donate a pint of blood for the candidate of your choice.
But it's interesting is because, you know, they want to get it approved so they can use it for the upcoming midterm elections. And they tried once before last fall when they were basically deadlocked on a similar request. There's this guy who runs a political group. His only name is SAI. I don't know if it would be Sai or Say, Sai, who runs this political group. Make your laws. Make your own laws. He's hopeful that the commission will approve it. He wants to use technology to give individuals a louder voice in elections and democracy.
And how does he propose to do that?
But there is currently no law that prevents the use of Bitcoin in elections. So even in Texas, where you're at, Al, Attorney General Greg Abbott, he said last week that he would accept donations in Bitcoin. The Libertarian Party also collected between 10,000 and 20,000 in Bitcoin each year. I mean, even though it's a very small percentage of what they raise annually, it's still there. My question is this, how visible is this going to be? I mean, isn't that the whole point of Bitcoin, is because of the privacy and their transactions? So anybody could donate whatever they would like. Now, they say they're going to try to put limits and so forth on it.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to put limits on how much money you can give a congressman.
Yeah. So
no one can give a congressman more money than he can carry without straining his back. That should be a law, Melody.
And Holder, he said last week that virtual currencies pose a challenge for law enforcement agencies because they can be used to hide illegal activity.
Oh, my gosh.
That's just cracking.
Certainly no congressman, senator, attorney general, governor, they would never engage in illegal activity. That wouldn't be part of the reason they're looking for Bitcoins, so they can conceal how they spend them. Ah, the whole thing is crazy. And again, what does it say when the government is prepared to accept Bitcoins rather than Federal Reserve notes? Well, not rather than, but in addition to. It's evidence that the dollar is not doing all that well. It's evidence that even the congressmen and the senators and the governors and the rest of them say, hey, give me something I can depend on. I'll take Bitcoins.
But before we head into break, we must tell the listeners, we had a last-minute guest, David Krieger. I have lots of comments after David's on the program. He's one of my suppliers when he's on the program. Good comments. People enjoy listening to him. And so we're going to have him on the program today. He should be joining us right after the break, which we should be going to right now.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our extra strength pain relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk. And our special guest today is David Krieger from Hobson NBT. And David Krieger has been my wholesaler, and we've been working together for many, many years. And we always enjoy, and listeners enjoy, having him join us on the program. Good afternoon, David.
Hi, Melody. It's good to hear your voice.
Thank you. It's good to have you here. And probably the most, perhaps we should get right into your opinion on the gold market. I mean, we've certainly seen a lot of pressure on the prices of gold. How do you see the market?
Well, you know, like I've often told you, Melody, I don't see into the future at all, but I deal throughout the day with what's happening, if you will. And to me, it seems like this is a fairly good time for gold and silver. And the reason I say that is, if you remember, just last year, gold and silver were considerably higher. In fact, I was looking at this on April 10th of last year. Gold was at 1561 in the morning, 1558 the next day, then on the 12th it started to drop down. So on April 12th of 2013, by the end of Friday the 12th, it was down considerably. To 1500, and by Monday it was down to 1370 at noon. So I guess I'm kind of looking at it and saying April has been traditionally not a great month. You have some things that are contributing to it, tax days there. So people are kind of worried the first couple of weeks or tend to be about taxes and so on, and they get out of the market. Today I noticed that gold is, you know, from the 11th and the 15th, it was a little over 1,300, then a little bit below 1,300. Today it's at 1,285. But I'm kind of bullish. I talk to people who are accumulating, And they see this as a good time to be accumulating gold. Price is about right for them. It's a good market. And frankly, some of the world conditions are forcing them to think what's going on.
Well, what world conditions are you talking about right now, David?
Well, you know, over the years, we've sold a lot of European gold. And the primary European gold is we have all kinds of products, Swiss francs, British sovereigns, some of the French coins. But I'll tell you, with Russia moving in and the situation politically over in Europe, it's very difficult to get those coins. People are holding on to them. What they accumulated, they're holding. And as a result, premiums are going up on the European coins, and they're very hard to get. I'm not selling any right now because we can't bring them back in.
I was looking at something from Coin Week lately, and they were talking about ancient coins. All right, coins minted by Rome back in the day.
Yes.
And, you know, is that something you deal with? Do you deal with ancient coins, or are you pretty much confined to coins that were made in the last 200 years here in the United States and or Europe?
I frankly don't have an interest in the world or antiquities, okay. Although they're actually getting fairly popular. We can probably talk about it in a little while, but the Numismatic Guarantee Corporation has been encapsulating and grading as a third-party grader many rare coins. And I think the current market is that if you have a high-grade antiquity or some kind of a high-grade world coin, they're grabbing high prices. If it's fairly normal quality stuff, well, the market is a little bit thin for that, particularly in America.
I'd have to imagine that buying antique coins, really antique, again, we're talking about coins that were manufactured, I'm just going to say 1,000, 1,500, 3,000 years ago. That's got to be a pretty strange investment or collectible arena, just because you're going to have a hard time finding coins that aren't worn. You're not going to find very many that are, you could call, mint state condition. They're going to be worn, and it becomes pretty much subjective. It's certainly been subjective in the past. If NGC is getting in there and they're grading these now, that's a different story. But it would have to be, you know, how do you grade a coin that's 2,000 years old?
Well, I guess I would answer that in kind of a strange way, Al. One of my friends who specializes in high-grade world gold, particularly British coins, British realm coins, basically will sell his world coins to those who are interested in collecting them, and then he buys American gold for his own accumulation. I've always kind of laughed at that and said, well, you know, I guess that really shows where his heart is. He's an expert in rare coins, ancient coins, hundreds of years old. But in his own safe, he's got American rare coins and bullion. So I always kind of felt that this appeals to people who have very eclectic interests, and I don't think there are a whole lot of people throughout America that do that.
I understand. There's more history involved in these ancient coins than we would see in,
well, I think so, but,
modern,
you know,
coins. I know that there's history, yeah, in the modern coins, but
yeah,
but you take a coin 2,000 years ago, and it plugs you into more depth, more chronology.
Well, I think it's easier for a guy like me, to think of a Carson City silver dollar or a $20 gold piece that is in mint state 63 or 64, and knowing that at some point in the early life of that coin, it was probably going on a buckboard from Carson City Yeah, just and I find that more of an exciting thing than looking at some of the very intricate designs of coins from, say, the 1200s.
I understand it could be that it was even might have been stolen somewhere along the right or somewhere along the route by some highway man with a double barrel shotgun.
It could have been
spent back into existence. It's hard to know where the coins have been, but they do have. There's a story there. And I know you are fascinated by the history of the coins. That's not so true for most Americans, but I'd have to imagine the people that get into these antiquities, they really have to have, I would assume they have a fairly profound sense of history and appreciation for history that is just unusual, beyond, there's not, it's going to be a pretty thin market. You said it, you sent us a letter about, you described the potential sales of coins in a local estate you were familiar with, and you wanted to talk about some of the lessons learned. What are the lessons?
Well, yeah,
why don't you describe that sale, and then we'll talk about the lessons.
Well, I was contacted by a very large law firm, and periodically they have clients who have inherited or they've claimed various assets, and in this case, it's an estate that's valued well over $1 million in the last appraisal that was made. And I got a call basically asking if I'd be interested in helping and making a bid on these coins. And I said, sure, of course. And my interest is that a large law firm does this periodically. And I think that it's always interesting what they come up with. Well, in the case of this, it's a collection where a father has died and he has left his son basically 144 Eagles, 13,980 Circ dollars, 82,140 half dollars, 90%, quite a bit of coins. And so when I talked to the son, his idea was, well, look, I want to get four or five or six coin dealers in a room, give you about an hour in order to look at the collection, and then give me a bid with a check so I can go to your bank, trade that check in, and get a bank check and disperse it to my family or myself. So I thought of that, and to me, it isn't uncommon when people inherit coins or what goes on, and I'm really talking to, I hope, your listeners who have accumulated gold as a lesson learned as to maybe what not to do. I, for instance, have always recommended to people that have accumulated any quantity of gold that they put a nice letter in with their collection with directions on who to contact and who they, you know, probably who they purchased it from, so that they know what you know, they will have a reliable person to sell it back to. So anyhow, this is not the case of this son. And so I thought about this for a while, and some of the lessons learned that I thought your listeners might find of interest is, first of all, putting six coin dealers into a room really becomes almost counterproductive. It may be that the coin dealers will come up with the best value, but it's going to be a confusing thing. It's going to be stressful. And I just don't recommend it. The best way to do this to me is to find a reliable, creditable, recommended dealer that has the wherewithal to basically either bank wire or write a check right on the spot for these, and not go around. I guess it would be similar to buying a car. You can go to one or two dealers, but when you get to six dealers, you're getting confused and you kind of lose the direction of what you're going. So in this case, I said, stick with one dealer. The second thing is I don't think when you have an hour to look at something and you have 165,000 dimes, quarters, and half dollars, which weigh roughly 3,100 pounds, that you can make a very good assessment in a short period of time. So it behooves the seller to at least allow a coin dealer enough time to do due diligence. You know, if you were selling 100 Swiss francs to somebody, you would expect the guy was going to count them, and you'd count them before he gave it to him. But if you have 165,000 coins, you know, it's only fair that the dealer gets a chance to count those as well.
It would be complicated by having six dealers there also.
Oh, yeah.
Just because each one is probably going to want to look at the coins individually himself, not only to count them, but also to assess their quality.
Well, if you're buying 82,000, you know, half dollars, and you think the value of 82,000 half dollars is someplace around, you know, $500,000, you know, one, the coin dealer wants to know what he's buying, so he's going to at least make a token effort to look at them. But, you know, let's say he's off by a factor of 100. Instead of having 82,000, he only has 78,000. Well, that's a loss. That's probably the profit level for that dealer. So he needs to confirm it. And I, you know, these are big numbers, but it really applies to smaller sellers as well. Somebody that has 100 British sovereigns, or you know, 100 British sovereigns and, you know, 50 French francs, and, you know, 20 five libs and in a holder, or 20 saints. You need to have those so that it is easy to be presented to the person that you're going to sell them to, so that they know exactly what they're buying, and they can make the best possible bid for those coins. Does that make sense to you, Al?
Yeah, I follow what you're saying, but it really does sound like a lot of time is involved in a situation like this. This is, you've got the heir who wants to just, let's get this deal done in 1 hour, give you 60 minutes, take a look, write the check, and I'm out of here.
That's exactly what he wants. You got that exactly right. And yet, you know, on the other end, if I were the purchasing dealer, which I hope to be, I need to arrange for a Brinks truck, you know, with two big burly guys to pack it up, to tag it and get it into their truck so I can go to the consolidator.
You're talking a pound and a half of coins.
Sir?
Right?
I'm sorry, you
had 3,100 pounds of coins?
Yep. That's about what it takes.
A pound and a half of coins. I mean, it takes a little time just to move that around. I'm not sure if you had to count those. There's a certain amount of effort involved in handling 3,000 pounds of coins, even if you're just sliding them back and forth on the desk. I mean, all by itself, that's a physical challenge for a lot of people.
Yes,
well,
you know what?
You know, David, you made a very good point. If you deal with one person, you do eliminate a lot of steps when you do go to liquidate, because you know you trust the dealer that you're working with because you purchased your items from him and you know how the process works. So you have that range of confidence in the dealer that you're working with. So you eliminate a lot of these steps. The dealer also knows the quality of product because he knows who and what the product was when he shipped the items. So now, basically, you just need to confirm the quantity to make sure that everything is there. Because you're right, when you're dealing with that many bags of silver, you know, just missing, you know, handfuls and so forth out of there, it certainly can make a difference on the bottom line. And the key thing is leaving instructions with your product. I have many clients that have substantial amounts of gold, and they have instructions on how to liquidate. And yes, what happens so often is the grandchildren or the children, they don't understand gold. They think it's silly. Like, what do I want to do with this? And they're very much in a hurry to liquidate.
Well,
I agree completely with you. Yep.
Crack the Ferrari. When they hit the tree with the Ferrari, they'll wish they'd kept the gold. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom and Mr. David Krieger on Financial Survival. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Come countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom and our guest, Mr. David Krieger, talking about the coin business. And a couple of things come to mind. First off, when we have, if the attorneys are organizing a sale for this estate and they're inviting half a dozen, or the heir is inviting half a dozen dealers to come compete for a bid on these coins, what's likely to happen with that bid? How likely are the dealers to bid and perhaps bid very high, where the heir makes a significant profit over what he might otherwise have expected for 3,000 pounds of coins? Are they likely to overbid, or are they likely to underbid? Or are we going to get a fair market price? Do you have any projection on that?
Well, I can't obviously speak for the other people that would be competing for the bid, but I will say that I have the last appraisal that was done by a fairly large company, in the business, and what it looks to me like is that when they computed the value of the 90% silver, they computed it fairly low. Now, they may have been making that appraisal based on an appraisal value, approximate value, given silver spot, which was $19.50 at the time. But as I backward computed it, it looked to me like they computed what the value of the 82,000 halves was using a value for spot silver that was under 90% of the actual spot value of silver at that time. Now, remember, when you buy, the selling dealer, anybody, uses what current silver spot is. So as I'm looking at the market right now, silver's at 1945. And if I were to sell, an American Silver Eagle to someone, I would basically use 1945 silver and then, add my premium, and that would be the price. Well, in buying it back or making this appraisal, it appears that this large company used only 90% of the value of silver spot. So you have to be kind of careful about that. Now, it's not unusual to go back a little bit from spot, but going back more than 10 or 12% is very, very unusual and would really apply mostly to a really hard to sell coin if I can think of one, and I can't at this moment.
And is it standard procedure for appraisers to lowball a little bit? Is it a question of prudence and diligence, something along, could they have a liability if they exceeded the price, if they were 10% higher than the market price? Would that expose the appraisers to some sort of liability, and they try to avoid that by being perhaps 10% lower?
I would hope not. I mean, there are all kinds of publications out that are easily obtainable by a reputable dealer that indicate what the current market is. They're published every week. Some are called blue sheet, some are called a gray sheet. They reflect some value that it may be that it changes, but my feeling is that a reputable dealer would give an accurate value of coins based on then current spot and silver, and just basically say this is based on this silver, this market, but premiums and spot do change, and you know that it's a fluctuating market almost all the time. And I think virtually anybody that's ever bought precious metals knows that.
Well, you know what, David? Sometimes listening, my clients will tell me they'll be checking out prices and they get all these low bids from various dealers. And yeah, they're some of them are, you know, common names, you know, my competitors.
Yeah.
And their bids are so low. You'll find this also in your local coin stores. They don't have the cash flow. They don't want to buy it back. So they will give you an extra low bid, knowing that you're going to go looking elsewhere to get a comparable bid. Someone else will be higher, and it gets them off the hook without actually saying, gee, I don't want your coins. I don't have the cash flow to pay you. So, you know, go someplace else.
Doesn't that fit, Melody, right in with what you were saying earlier about sticking with the dealer that you know? She, in your case, you know the quality of what you provided. You're willing to buy it back, and it's really kind of a waste of effort to go around and give it to a stranger someplace.
I mean, I just had a gentleman this week. He was selling just a handful of circulated $20 libs. His local dealer was $125 lower than what I paid him. And he couldn't believe, and he calls me and was yelling at me because the bid he got from the local dealer was so low, thinking that his coins were, I was like, no, he doesn't want your coins. He probably doesn't have, because local dealers are basing their business on the local economy. They don't have access to the national
I think it's true also that about 98% of the coins that they buy are immediately turned around to a consolidator and sold, exactly for the reason you said, which is cash flow. That's how we make our business.
Mm-hmm. But the local guy has to put those coins that he buys back in his display case and resell them. It could be sitting, that coin that he bought back could be sitting there for months if he doesn't have the guy coming in to buy his coins.
Very few of those local coin dealers do that, and I agree with you. You know, there are a few. There's some that have, you know, are well capitalized, but that's the minority.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about an appraiser putting a price on these coins, is he more likely to give us the wholesale price on the coins, or is he going to give us the retail price on the coins?
Well, I don't know, but generally the way it's done is that they will, on a large purchase, for instance, a lot of times they'll say, hey, just a minute, I need to go back and check some prices. What they do is they go in the back room and call up the guy they're going to sell them to, you know, the wholesaler that happens to be the one that their go-to guy, and says, hey, what are you going to pay me for 20 libs in XF or AU? And they get a number, and so that's the number they're going to sell it for. So they come back and they figure out what they want to do, and they take a certain percentage away from that number, and that's what they offer the person standing in front of them. Now, that's their profit margin, and I'm not critical of that. I'm just saying that's
business is business. You got to survive. You can't give these things away. You have to make a dollar on it or you can't stay in business. That's the reality of it. So
it always makes me laugh. You have these dealers who say that if you buy your coins from us, when you sell your coin, we won't charge you a commission. We'll do it out of the goodness of our hearts.
Yeah, right.
They're just like the government. They're here to help you.
I hear you.
But how does anybody know what the bid price when you go to sell your coins is based on the market at that given time? It changes all the time.
That's right. Absolutely.
If I have a line of clients standing out my door and I don't have product, I'll pay far more than what the normal bid price would be on that particular item. On the other hand, if you just had gold at 5,000 and everybody is selling their gold and there's no one buying, you're going to come in probably a little bit below that bid. So it varies from market to market, day to day.
When we talk about prices, one of the things David brought up in some of the commentary that he sent us, he said every time he's on the program, he mentions certified coins, and there are only two third-party independent grading services that he recommends today, PCGS and NGC. All right? These are the people that slab the coins. They put the coin inside of a heavy-duty plastic container, and they certify the quality of the coin, whether it is MS-61 or 62 or 63, and it takes a certain amount of worry out of purchasing the coins, knowing that you'll be able to sell it for the same. If you bought an MS-62, you're going to be able to sell it as an MS-62. You won't have someone say, oh, no, that's only an almost uncirculated or whatever. The quality is essentially certified, and that makes it makes purchasing the coins safer. Now, when we compare PCGS to NGC, these are the two major grading services. Is there a perceived difference in quality even between those two services, and does this perception, if there is one, will people pay more for an NGC coin graded MS-62 than they will for a PCGS coin graded MS-62? Is there any variation along those lines?
You know, I've dealt with this question probably for at least 15 years, and it's a very common one, and you will run into people who absolutely will not buy any other coin than a PCGS coin. And then you'll turn around, and there will be the person that will not buy any other coin than an NGC coin. It's kind of like what I've always said. It's like those that believe in Ford against those who believe in Chevrolet.
Yeah.
It's a complete personal choice. Now, what I find interesting about it is that the PCGS is in Newport Beach, California. It's a West Coast company. NGC is in Sarasota, Florida. It's an East Coast company and was in New Jersey before that. So it tends to be that people that live on the East Coast or east of the Mississippi like NGC coins over PCGS, and those that live to the west of the Mississippi prefer PCGS. I don't have a preference. I think that they're both fine coins, and I'm not just saying that because I sell both of them, but I like them. So.
And there's not likely to be a difference where one of them says grades a coin MS-61 and the other comes in and says, no, it's an MS-62. If there were a competition, essentially, would they be, we could assume that both of them, their grading systems are going to be about identical.
I over the years, I've really found that they're pretty close. Now, what does happen in really high value coins, for instance, I think a couple of times I've mentioned the $5 million extra high relief $20 gold piece that we used to cart around to shows. And that was graded by both PCGS as a proof 69, MS-69 proof, and or PF-69, and the same with NGC. So they both graded it the same. At one time, somebody wanted it in NGC, so we had it graded by that, and somebody else wanted it in PCGS, so we had it graded in that. And so they both came up with the same grade, and I think that's a good indicator that the grading is probably pretty much the same.
How do the grading agencies How are they paid for their services, and how much do they add to the price of a coin?
Well, you know, the way they came about was exactly what you said. Some people couldn't tell the difference between an XF or a mint state coin. Unscrupulous people sold coins as mint state, and when they went to sell them, the guy said, well, no, it's only XF. And so there was a lot of heartbreak. So the third-party grading service came in where they independently grade these. They stand by the authenticity of it in the grade, and, they encapsulate it in a holder that is what is called tamper evident. In other words, if you can't break the coin out and slip another one in. And it's been a very positive system, one that I think has lent great credibility to collectors because they know what they have. I'm not sure I answered your question. What was it, Al?
How are they paid? How much do they?
Oh,
one way or another, they have to be paid for grading the coin. I was wondering what that costs per coin. Is it a percentage? Is it a flat fee?
Yeah, it's pretty much a flat fee. What they do is, and I apologize that you can hear the hammering in the background. We're doing some work on the office complex here, and they must be coming right in front of our window here. So I apologize, but
it's all right.
Anyhow, the coin itself is routed between 4 to 5 independent graders. They go in, they're completely oblivious to who submitted the coin. In other words, if some big company submits the coin, they're trying to eliminate the possibility that somebody's going to get a leg up because they send a lot of coins in and so on. So that the person that sends in one coin a year, you should be treated the same as one that sends in 100 coins a year. The five people go through and they all assign a grade in their opinion that it's authentic, and this is a grade they would give it. And then there is a decider, and both grading services work the same. The decider looks at those grades. Now, let's say three of them say it's a 63 and two of them say it's a 64. That decider will look at it, and what he decides is what grade goes on to that coin. And it's a fairly straight system. I think those guys get paid a few dollars per coin, but they grade quite a few coins. And the most expensive coin grading on a normal coin is $100 for a quick turnaround, and it can be as low as $20 or $25 by dealers that submit coins.
All right, David, we are out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program, David Krieger. And I forget the name of the company. It's not here right in front of me.
Hobson NBT.
Hobson NBT. I'm sure David will be back again probably within the next month. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, David, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.